Hi, this is Chris, host of A Couple of Drips. Just before we start, I wanted to say a quick word about our subscribers' memberships. If you'd like to help support future episodes, you can subscribe to the show for a few pounds a month. This'll help fund production, coffee, and guest expenses. Simply click on the support button in the episode description. Cheers, and enjoy the show.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Settle in and turn it up. It's time for A Couple of Drips. Coffee, conversation, and occasional quips. Here's your host, Chris Granger.
Hello, and welcome to A Couple of Drips. Thanks for tuning in. And my guest today, I won't mess around today. I'll just introduce him straight away. He's a guy that I've known for a number of years, and we'll talk very shortly about how we met and how we were introduced. But please welcome Mr. Alan Kent. Hello there, sir.
Hello, Chris.
I thought you'd nodded off there.
Sorry, the coffee's just taking my retinas out.
Brilliant. So, Alan, how did we meet?
Well, I seem to think it was probably in Granville's.
Yeah, Granville's is a bar in Stone for anyone listening isn't local. Famous for music, isn't it?
It's also famous for me being on the door.
I did
12 years on the door then.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
You can all be sneaky music contacts.
Yeah, I remember you working in there as a bar, and I remember seeing you with a band early on when I first moved here. Probably the first night I'd moved here, actually. I'd unpacked a few boxes and thought, oh, I'll go down to Granville's because I can't be bothered to unpack. And I don't think I'd got a bed at the time, so I was going to be sleeping on the sofa.
You went out to get lucky, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought I might end up somewhere more comfy. And I remember seeing you with a band with Elliot on bass.
Oh, yeah. That's
Elliot Delderfield.
Yeah, it's when I was slagging on a corporate band. those horrible flashback days, yeah.
What was that band called?
Slag. Would it have been Dexter?
Yeah, it would. Yeah,
oh,
Dexter.
God, man.
Yeah, yeah, those were the days.
Sell your soul. Not anymore.
Did you not
though.
Enjoy that?
Oh my God! Oh, the worst. it was great, and I'll tell you why it was great. I don't think I'd be the person I am now if I hadn't done that stint, because we were out gigging twice a week.
Yeah,
you know, three times sometimes in the summer, and it made me. Obviously, at first when I started playing with them, I was a little bit nervous and everything. But you do them many gigs,
yeah.
You sort of end up owning your art form as performing.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then I owned it that much that I didn't really give a shit about it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then I couldn't wait to fucking jack it in and do my own stuff.
Yeah.
And now when I do my own stuff, I still get a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
But because of that, I don't know, it must have been like 7-8 years, but because of that concentrated performance era, I've sort of, I don't know, it gave me a good backbone for playing live.
Yeah.
So in that way, it was good.
Yeah.
The rest of it, shit.
So you moved into doing your own stuff. What was the kind of first thing you did as a solo artist, as it were?
Well, back in 96, I didn't start playing till I was about 20. I started learning to play guitar when I was about 20.
Yeah.
I was shit at school, no confidence and all that.
Yeah.
And it took me till I was about 20 to think, you know, I'd actually had guitar lessons when I was 13, but jacked because I just didn't like taking a guitar to school. It was too... Most people would get off on that.
Yeah.
I didn't like the attention. You know what I mean? It was like people were taking the piss, but they weren't
taking
the piss.
I'm surprised because you come across as quite a confident person now.
It's been a very, very long journey.
Right.
Long journey. And I would say I'm reasonably confident now, but, you know, like I say, it's been lots of different things in my life that have snowballed for me to be this person.
Yeah.
So the reason I started working on the door was to save up money to record my first album. And then the album came and went.
Yeah.
And I ended up jacking in my daytime job.
Oh, well,
and just working on Friday and Saturday nights and living on that. And and just writing and trying to become, you know, a better musician. And you know.
I mean, it's a great venue from the point of view that it does have a history of music, doesn't it? You know, I mean, everyone's played there. Ackerbilk and Humphrey Littleton.
Well, back in 95, whenever it was, I started there, it was like a jazz bar.
Yeah.
But then, ironically, it was Dexter played there,
with
a different singer, and it was during the time of TFI Friday and Ocean Colour Scene and all that, and they played there, and people would always walk past that place en route to somewhere else.
Yeah.
But on this particular night, they were doing a, was it the Riverboat Song or something?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They were in the window playing that, and people
I remember you being in the window playing that.
Yeah, and people stopped and walked across, and it changed overnight into this sort of rock and roll venue.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's cool.
Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, you can see everything there. It's been overtaken recently, or taken over, I should say, by new owners. I mean, what's do you think it's changed the dynamic in there a little bit?
I've only been in once or twice.
But yeah.
For me, it was.
Is that telling in itself?
It was a home from home for me. I used to, you know what I mean? I'd
always
get lock-ins in there, get trashed. You know, it was rock and roll days.
Yeah. Well, when I first moved here, I didn't know anyone, but I'd played at Granville's Open Mics quite a bit. So that was like the first place. I didn't really know anyone in Stone. That was the first thing I gravitated towards. And it was certainly a very welcoming atmosphere. I remember like the first couple of nights I was there.
That's all the fucking acid everybody was on.
Well, just the first couple of nights I was there. I remember there was a girl called Kelly Work there. I don't know what ever happened to her, but... we don't want to go there. Okay. All right. So
she owes me fucking money.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's not through drugs.
I've not seen her for years, but anyway. And I didn't know anyone, and I got talking to her and a few other people. And I remember, like, they chucked everyone out, and I was still fucking sitting there talking to people. And it was such a friendly place, you know.
It was, You know, it was just a certain. Everybody's got a place like that in their own history, aren't they? Well, if they're lucky enough, they have.
Yeah.
For me, that sort of 10-year gap that I had, probably from about 28 to 38, it was just, it was pretty magical.
Brilliant,
it was home from home.
Well, certainly, I mean, for me, moving here, you know, and not knowing anyone, that felt like a safe space, you know. It did feel like a friend.
Because I was on the fucking door.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You owe me, geezer.
That's right. Well, I remember, like, I used to come down with Kelly, and she went, "You can't charge Chris." Which was good, because I'd got no money at the time.
Well, that's why she owes me money. Get your hand in your fucking pocket now.
I'd got no money at the time, so, like... to be able to avoid the entry fee to places was an extra couple of drinks. You
walking
know.
Around carrying a bass was a bit of a giveaway.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah. All together now. 1, 2, 3, 4. Coffee time, it's coffee time. It doesn't matter if it's your place or mine. Coffee they call the wine of therapy. Brews of wine is better than tea. You see, you can always tell when someone's not listened to the podcast before, because that ident always takes them by.
Honestly, I didn't think people did acid anymore. I think I'm really impressed.
Brilliant. So, what are we drinking, Al?
He's got
to pick up the coffee from the floor now.
He wants you to think it's something exotic, but it's fucking Kenko. Fucking bullshit, honestly. I don't even drink Kenko.
Alan is now putting his glasses on.
Fucking glasses. It's called Has-Been. Oh, no, it's not.
It's from Has-Been.
Oh, it's from Has-Been.
And it's called, here we go, it's a Brazilian.
It's the Brazilian edition, and it's called fucking Franzen's Indalego. What is it? Fucking hell, mate. Hold on a minute. I've only got an art degree. I had no formal education. Come on, help me out on that. What's that saying?
D17 in the Big Brother house. Right, it's Fazenda Inglaterra.
Inglaterra.
It's a natural processed bourbon from Has-Been Coffee in good old Syford. And
why does it say bourbon at the bottom of it?
That's the type of coffee bean.
What, the biscuit?
No, the
did you custard
there are different cream? There are different varietals of coffee beans.
I knew
so,
that.
Yeah.
Did you get like hazelnuts?
That's right.
Cape nuts.
Yeah.
Chili nuts.
Exactly.
Yeah. Coconuts.
Bloody nuts.
Should we go on?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, so, yeah. Now, the description says you can't miss the big layers of sweetness here. Think of Milky Way bar with milk chocolate and light but creamy nougat. As it cools, sultanas enter the mix alongside Brazil nuts. What do you reckon, Al? So let's have a slurp.
Yeah, anyway. Okay.
And Al has had a gargle as
Yeah. Now, I normally have sugar in mine, so this is like really supping it through a work boot.
Yeah. But, I mean, what surprised you when you arrived, I think, was the fact that you could drink it without sugar when you normally drink sugar. Just, so obviously it's not as bitter as you used to.
I was just
to.
Being polite.
Oh, right. Well, I'll pop and get the sugar cubes from next door.
No, it's all right, actually, yeah. I love coffee, I do. What strength is this? I mean, it tastes quite strong, but...
Any of the... Yeah, it tastes moderately strong. Any of the coffees that you can kind of have like this, where they've got flavours and tasting notes... They tend to be light to medium roast because, and I'm being over general here, so for anyone listening who's going to say that's a load of rubbish, but I'm being general, that tends to be, if you find a darker roast coffee, they tend to be roasting it dark to cover up imperfections in the coffee.
Oh, I see.
So when you get a lighter roast, it's normally an individual source. It's from a single farm. Normally the farmers are paid well. You won't find any broken beans in the bag. You know,
if you say broken glass.
No, if you.
Well, oh, that's a
where
coffee
are you
from,
getting your coffee from? Like,
Longton Market.
No, you tend to find with mass-produced coffees or where the farmers aren't very well paid or whatever, you tend to get a load of broken beans and stuff, and they tend to be darker roast to hide any sins. But if it's a lighter roast and if all the beans are intact in the bag and that, you will tend to find it's kind of better quality. Obviously, there are exceptions to all the rules, you know, but I'm glad you liked it.
I'm bowing down to the connoisseur.
I'm glad for a man who normally drinks it with sugar that you found it palatable.
I drink it with fucking whiskey. I drink it with anything.
That's what I like to hear. Coffee at 3 a.m. Absolutely. Why not? 3 a.m. coffee chaser. So, Alan, you talked about going solo. You've got a release out soon, I understand.
Yeah.
I think by the time this episode goes out, it'll already be out.
So. Yeah, so it'll be the 15th of this month, which is July. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this episode will go out a bit later on. But tell us what the album's called.
The album's called 6% Viking, and it's 12 tracks.
6% Viking?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
I presume you've done a DNA thing.
Yes,
that.
I fucking have.
Yeah, brilliant.
But the thing is, I think they're fucking great, them DNA
I could tell
tests,
that by so. The long hair and the rippling muscles, to be honest. What? Yeah.
Showing myself a bit of love.
Yeah.
Now, well, the thing is, I'm sort of lucky and unlucky to have lots of people that I've grown up with since a kid.
Yeah.
So we've gone through, you know, when you go through life, and you're always sort of saying, oh, I'm a fucking Viking. Before Vikings were fashionable like they
yeah,
are now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'd say, oh, I'm a I'm an ancient Briton and all this
yeah,
malarkey.
Yeah.
So especially one of my mates, Mr. Gary Leff, I don't know if you know him, but I've grown up with him. And so I have the DNA test. He goes, all right then, Viking, what percentage are you? And I ended up being 6% Icelandic or something like that.
Yeah.
Northern European and, you know,
yeah.
Welsh and Irish, which is cool, you know, that might be a Celt. But I put myself down as just being an ancient Briton, that's all I am.
I've heard a few people call you a Celt.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, my name is Alan Celt.
Yeah.
but the sting in the fucking tail is when he did his.
Yeah.
And he's half the size of me and everything. Well, he come back something like fucking 40%.
Oh wow!
And it was like
he's like and thoroughbred he just almost.
It's
yeah.
basically
yeah.
like you know yeah. standing next to somebody having a piss, and they just look down at you and go 6% and 40%. And I was like, "Fucking hell!" But in my defence, he was also. I mean, this is fucked up. This is so he's 40% Nordic, whatever.
Yeah.
I can't remember what he was.
Yeah,
But he was 40% fucking Egyptian. What was his ancestors doing? I mean, that's so. And so to me, that cancels out the 40% Nordic.
Do you think so? Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Egyptians.
You think the black eyeliner counts?
Well, there's nothing wrong with a bit of guyliner. I've been known to have that myself. You know what I mean?
We've all done it. We've all black done nails it. When
We're
playing the bass. Yeah,
so
yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so there was a bit of piss take, and so I've just used that bit of silly naivety.
And just
thrown that use.
So what's your inspiration for the album, and what are some of the key tracks on there?
I think...
Is there a particular theme running through the album, do you think?
No, mate. Just brutal honesty.
Okay.
I don't mean to sound corny, but...
Yeah.
Some of these songs feel like they've been hanging around for 10 years, and perhaps one or two have been, but the majority of
looking
it...
Looking for a home.
And the majority of it's really been in these last 2 years. They've been recorded in the last 2 years.
Plenty of time to do that.
Yeah, honed in and then recorded. I mean, I've got a shitload of tunes that are recorded, ready for release. So really this album was draw a line underneath these songs, let them be what they are now,
yes,
and then move on, you know.
Yeah, because there's that sense, isn't there, that a song is never completely finished, you know.
But honestly, these songs are finished. I've worked hard on them, you know. I think they're well-crafted tunes, but at the end of the day, I think they just stand up lyrical songs. That's what I love.
Yeah.
I love lyrics. I love stories. That sort of thing. An attitude.
Excellent. So give us a couple of song titles and tell us what they're about.
Opens up with a song called Car Crash Baby, which is when I met my lady, we were madly, you know, that sort of when you're just obsessed with each other.
Sure.
And lots of people didn't like the relationship and it was dead rock
really?
And roll. It's a bit of an age gap, 16 years difference. But we knew we were, you know...
Yeah.
We knew we were it.
When you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the song's really about that relationship, that Bonnie and Clyde sort of relationship, you know.
Yeah.
We were like coming out guns blazing, you know. Other titles, Love Life is a song. The line is, you're so full of beautiful. And that's basically was written around the time when my lady was pregnant with our first lad.
Yeah.
So watching her grow, you know.
Brilliant.
The vessel of creation.
Yes.
And I'm going, fucking hell, I've had a part of that.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant.
So that came from that. There's other songs on there, Bow Down, which is sort of a bit of an angst song against society, you know.
Yeah. We're recording the day after Boris has announced his...
Yes, fucking hell, so suck on that.
But he's still there.
They are.
He's still there. He's clinging on.
Insert Bow Down now.
he's clinging on like a.
This is the fucking embarrassment, man, isn't it? The whole thing's just fucking corrupt down to the bone.
Oh, it's
fuck
been
the system off
unbelievable.
Now. It doesn't work. Fuck the system off.
But I think what's worse than Boris is all the people who've supported him, even though they've known he's a liar all the way along. I was watching the...
But it's not that now, is it? It doesn't matter that he's a liar.
Yeah.
What people get... The fucking establishment, they get annoyed where if you get caught lying, it's okay to lie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's standard for them fuckers.
Lying's fine, it's getting caught, but... Yeah, you can lie all you want, but don't get caught. Getting caught is really bad.
No, honestly, it's
just all the people who've supported him, and so like Rees-Mogg, who you know, who's just oh no, he's a great prime minister.
Who's
and
that?
Jacob Rees-Mogg, you know.
I don't know who is he.
That
where's he live? Do we know him?
That really posh bloke who lives in like the last century, and he goes, "Well, my valet did that for me."
Oh, there's a bunch of cunts on me. They're so removed from what normal existence is.
Yeah,
I mean the fuckers have been knocking around since the fucking Norman invasion, aren't they?
You can guarantee
that it was them ancestors that were siding with the fucking French and got paid off. Now I'm not being anti-French, but I'm saying. Some of those them lines, them riches go back for fucking hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And them fuckers are still there and they're holding on to it. What I'm trying to say is they are that removed from normality.
Yeah.
They haven't got a clue.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we best bring it back to the...
Fucking rant! Rant! Ranting!
Nurse, he's out of bed again.
More coffee!
More coffee.
Chris, get the Kenko back on.
I'd never live it down. Okay, so where did you record the album, Al? What's
in my little cesspit of a studio.
Okay, what have you got? Tell us what you use.
Well, mate,
for the geeks listening, what software are you using?
Well, I tell you what, I did a studio tour for this clown fest that we'll talk about, and they asked me to do a studio tour, and I was that embarrassed because they're all like acid house guys, techno guys.
Sure.
And they're the racks of systems that they had were ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I was that embarrassed. I just said, look, I'll do your studio tour, but can I just dissect one of my songs instead and talk about the making of it and the making of the video?
Yeah.
And they said, yeah. And they were all cool with that, and it went down a storm. But literally, I was that embarrassed because all I fucking got is Audient ID14, external sound card.
Yeah.
A computer,
yeah,
and a Rhodes,
yeah,
Rhodes K2 condenser mic,
yeah.
I've got a decent amp, and I've got a selection of your typical mics that you'd have,
yeah.
And that's it, mate. That's it. I use Cubase 5,
brilliant,
quite an old version, but I know it well,
yeah.
And I think that's I think
for anybody, does the job. If it does the job
for anybody out there, I think if you get to know something really well.
Yeah,
that makes up the fucking everything, because you can make anything happen.
Yeah,
can't you? You know, with the software.
Yeah,
but I think people just run away with themselves.
Yeah,
and I think my approach to music is write a fucking good song.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
use the lyrics. I love films and I love images, and I've got a big art, art background, and to me it's write a story that you can see.
Yeah.
And then make the music the landscape.
Yeah.
And that's it. You can't go wrong. Yeah. Just be honest to the song. Yeah. Whatever backdrop that needs, fucking make it happen, you know. And I think you can do that with anything, can't you?
Well, people have all kinds of levels have produced entire albums on a laptop nowadays. Yeah. Recording's not what it used to be. You don't need the big space.
Exactly. All you got to do is go back to fucking early 70s, 60s, and look what songs were done on 4 tracks.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and even when you listen back to perhaps not Beatles and that, but some of the Stones stuff.
Yeah.
And the levels all over the place. They've got distortion on the acoustic, things like that. But at the end of the day, I know it's an endearing thing because you've sort of grown up with it.
Yeah.
But the songs still stand up.
Yeah.
Don't make any fucking difference whatsoever. Yeah, you get to a point where you just got to have belief in yourself as a songwriter, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely.
And now you certainly get to a point where you go, is this song finished? And you go, yeah, it is. And then you think, oh, perhaps I could, master it better, or I should look at the bottom end more and stuff like that. But you've got to have faith in what you do, haven't you? Just go, they like it or they don't like it.
So when you're recording, do you start with a drum track or do you start with an acoustic guitar or ukulele?
It's either a riff that's normally on an acoustic or something like that. Or even a progression on a uke or something.
Yeah.
Or it's a lyric idea.
Yeah. The lyrics come before or after the music, generally? Or does it completely depend?
Normally phrases, hooks. Nice little lyric lines,
Yeah.
Where either you'll hear somebody say something or I'll come up with something. Or I'm always messing about with my boys coming out with silly sort of crimps if you're ever a Mighty Boosh fan coming up with silly little poems and stuff like that and sometimes something just comes out the top of your head and it sounds brilliant you can just run with that, and I've loosened up a lot with that instead of being quite anal about lyrics and that try to have fun with them sometimes.
Yeah, brilliant.
But sayings as well, when I was on the door, you'd get some lads coming in to do agency work, and they were from Wolverhampton, and they're like Roy Deads and all stuff like that, and they took themselves very seriously, I remember this one time he'd say, and you might have heard the saying, he goes, it's better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6. you know what I mean, but I've actually used that line and put it into like a ukulele sort of almost love song.
Brilliant.
And it stands out fucking beautifully.
Yeah.
For all the wrong reasons, what I mean? Yeah. But he was saying it like he's some kind of fucking gangster, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I came to an original songwriting evening that you did down at the Swan recently.
I'm surprised you could get in. It was fucking rammed.
It was rammed door to door. Who was the other guy you were up there with?
Gary Lynchwood.
Yeah, Gary, who's also worth checking out.
Nicely put in, you'd be able to tag that.
Also worth checking out.
Oh, he's brilliant. Gary, yeah, he's got an album out.
Has he?
He's got an album out. I think it's going to be probably early next year.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely check out Gary Lynchwood.
I'll put a link in the description.
He's got a beautiful style. Finger-picking acoustic guitarist.
Brilliant.
It's lovely.
And you were playing ukulele, which I was quite surprised. How did you come across that instrument? What was your introduction to that?
Good question. Just like anything, you know, in a... I don't know if you've done. I'm sure every family across the country now has brought somebody a ukulele, like a kid or.
I was planning on getting one for my girlfriend for her birthday this year.
Seriously,
actually. Yeah, seriously,
honestly,
because she's got a beautiful singing voice.
Yes,
she's got no accompaniment.
Yeah, and it's a go-to place because it is quite an easy instrument to get your head around straight away. So if you just want to put a few chords together, yeah. I know most people think it's fucking quite twee and all that, but anyway. I brought one for my lady probably about 6 years ago now.
Yeah.
And like anything, I mean, you know, any musician out there, I'm sure, would agree, you know, you pick up any instrument and if you don't really know it that well and you start making up your own chords, there is a rush of creativity straight away. Yeah. It's like somebody's taking the shackles off a little bit.
Yeah.
And I wrote about 3 songs within about 2 days, you know, and I've sort of put it down now because it started getting silly, you know, I've probably got about 8 uke tracks.
Yeah.
So it's totally innocent.
It does free you up.
It's totally innocent, you know what I mean?
It does free you up. I know a few people who work like that.
But it's not just that, is it? I mean, like if you had an acoustic line around here and I picked it up, if it wasn't a particular acoustic that I've played before.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a different make, or you got it detuned or whatever. As soon as I strum it, you just hear it in a different way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just slightly different, isn't it? And that's all it needs sometimes, just to open up some doors. I'm not saying that I'd write a song on it, but I'm pretty sure that I'll come up with a progression that I've played 1,000 times, but suddenly heard it in a completely new light.
Yeah, no, I mean, Townsend said, you know, if you get stuck as a writer, play an instrument you can't play.
Yeah.
Because it frees up your mind because you forget the rules that you've learned on the
exactly.
on the previous
and
instrument.
And that sort of almost like a muscle memory of like you're playing in A minor and you're going to go to C and you know well all that goes through the well all that went out the window for me because like I say I didn't know the chords and I didn't look at the chords for a while and I started coming up with some funky riffs and if you listen to Car Crash Baby that's a fine example of some fucker who's gone, picked up a ukulele. Some George Formby fans out there fucking like crying, wailing in the streets. What's he fucking done to that ukulele? but that's a fine example.
No, I mean, as a bassist, when someone does that, it's really interesting because I've worked with people before and they've kind of made up chords and done chords and done this thing and you're like, you have to work it out. And when you say...
Yeah.
Oh, that's, you say, well, that's a D minor seventh or something. Is it?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Yeah. Worked with Tony Hollinshead a bit and he does, well, quite a lot. And he does that all the time, putting his finger down and then when trying to work it out to put a bass line to it or whatever. And I'm going, what key is it in, Tony? He's like, I've got a clue. and I work it out and it's surprising. We go, actually... If you'd known chords, that's a really complicated progression and you probably wouldn't have come up with it. But the fact that you're kind of feeling your way around it and just listening to what sounds good, you're going to come up with things that you wouldn't do if you had a certain amount of theoretical knowledge.
Yeah, and I've done that to a certain degree on this album most of my tracks where, you know, I've used synth parts and things like that. But I don't normally... And I'm not a piano player. I can play a few chords and stuff, but I still have to work out where middle C is and then go up and down like that. But sometimes I'll just play over the top.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then just see and use my ears instead of using fucking triads or anything like that. And just go for the feel.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, let's have a listen to My Anarchy from 6% Viking.
Stones of lovers mark me like a grave. Yes, I am the dying dead. Wash your hands, resurrect what's left of the dead. If you want to run, I'll run with you.
Hi there, Chris here, host of A Couple of Drips. If you'd like to help support the production of the show and buy the coffee we try, then you can either buy us a one-off thank you coffee at coffee.com, that's ko-fi.com, or if you'd like to become a member and give us regular support, then click on the support button in your player. Cheers for listening, and on with the show. So before you went into music, I believe you were teaching kickboxing, am I right?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I started, I'd always dabbled.
Yeah.
And I did boxing as a kid for a bit, you know, like most kids.
Yeah.
Did kung fu and stuff at early age. But it was really when I started working at Fighting Fit in our town, Stone.
Yeah.
Back in 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there for 20 years. You know what we're talking about confidence and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, man, you know, I think all kids should do some kind of martial art. You know, if you're not academic, you know, and you've already carrying a burden of being shit at school.
Yes.
It does have a... You're either going to come out as some bully boy fighting back, or you're just going to be totally insolent and not have any confidence whatsoever. I mean, and I was... Both of those.
Yeah.
Was some kind of paradox.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was things like that, you know, martial arts, brilliant. Yeah, and in 2000, I just lost my dad, so I was in a very delicate place.
Yeah.
And my friend was opening a gym, and it was he was actually looking for a gym, and I was working out in this bit of a derelict part above the Tower Studios.
Oh yeah,
that we know.
Yeah,
there was this derelict room, and I was just training in there. I had a few, you know, I had a punch bag up there and all that. And then my mate started looking for a venue for him to start a club, and I went, "Oh, come and have a look at this." And he came and had a look at it. He went, "Oh, this is brilliant."
Yeah.
And I went, "Well, you know, just go see the landlord." And I said, he goes, "Oh, thanks a lot, blah blah blah. Is there anything I can do?" I goes, "Yeah, if I can give me a job."
Yeah.
So I started working for him, and I had a 2-year trial by fire, you know, full contact fighting, training with really great, hard lads. And even though that wasn't my gig, that wasn't my scene, it just did me the world of good.
Yeah.
You know, especially in the grieving process and stuff like that.
And you're still quite buff, if you don't mind me saying.
Oh, thank you very much, baby. but honestly, no, it's still a massive part of my life. You know, I don't follow cage fighting or anything like that.
Sure,
you know, I'm more arty and everything, but it is still a part of my life. And I do see it as a part of my music as well.
It's
physicalities come into songwriting all the time, you know.
Interesting.
Smashing up guitars. No, I mean in an emotional way, you know.
Yeah.
It can fuel you and get you tap into your aggression and tap, you know.
Yeah.
And if you know how to say something, you've just got to tap into certain pockets of your emotions. There's nothing better than tapping into that pocket because you come out guns blazing, you know.
So from music, logical jump to festivals. You mentioned Clownfest earlier, and I have no idea what that is. So do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, definitely. I did this one track just into lockdown. There's a song called My Anarchy. It's on the album. And I recorded it all, did it all. I did the video in my back room. Against the wall. If you see the video, you'll understand where I am with this. So I had to think outside the box with the video.
I'll put a link in the
Yeah, cool. And so I just got in touch with Lee Ward, who's a good mate of mine. He's a martial art instructor and a brilliant musician. He's a songwriter as well. See, they do go together. There's more than just one of
them. They do.
And he said, I goes, I'm after getting this song reviewed. And he says, send it into this URL, Perio the Acid Clown. He does this online review, and basically it's really simple. You just send your URL of your track from SoundCloud or YouTube or anything like that.
Yeah, Bandcamp, etc.
Yeah, the first 40 that come through worldwide.
Yeah,
the following Tuesday, he'll play. I might have got the numbers wrong, but it's like 40 or 60 or something.
Sure,
he'll play the first half on that Tuesday night.
Yeah,
from 7:30 till 12:00, and everybody online reviews it. But it's so simple, and he's such a great host, such a warm guy. You know, he makes sure people doesn't troll and stuff like that. You know,
he
encourages the anarchy a little bit. You know,
yeah.
So anyway, I sent my track into there, and I missed the show for some reason. I didn't really know the format of it. And then the next, I got a text off my mate, so I watched it the next day, but. to my horror, when I started watching it, it was all like fucking acid house and techno. Oh,
right.
And I watched an hour and a half of it, and I was going, oh, fucking hell, I'm going to die a death here. They're going to string me to the rafters.
Yeah.
And then my track came on, and they were all really positive about it. And then they flagged it up about, you know, they gave it a mark 8 out of 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then from there, he'd already hosted an online festival.
Yeah.
Because we'd just gone into lockdown.
Yeah.
And he invited me on it.
Brilliant.
So from that, I think it's like 4 times a year for last. So I've done like 7 in the last 2 years. He's given me a 20-minute slot. So I've been so I've been banging
absolutely
in
fantastic
5 tunes every 3 months, and with 5 videos. And
fabulous.
It's been such just such a, you know,
yeah,
firework up the arse to get creative.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And yeah, having that deadline to...
Oh, man, but he's done...
Nothing motivated
but done
like
that,
a deadline.
But you can see... But now his festivals run from... I think they kick in around 5:30 and they run to 12 o'clock.
Right.
Well, in the last festival, it was a week, 7 days. That's like three bands an hour. He had an obscene amount of bands, and he hosts it all and everything.
You couldn't physically run a festival like that, could you?
Oh, man, no. Well, you've got to be a certain geezer to do that, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know? And he is. He's a great musician himself. He comes out with loads of, you know, techno, acid house and stuff like that.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's just been an absolutely beautiful experience.
That's
fantastic. To be a part of it, and to be slightly different from the rest of them. Well, 99% of them has even been more rewarding, because it's felt more of a challenge, you know what I mean, to win them across, you know.
Yeah.
And then they just showcased my album the other night. And, you know, fantastic.
And do you think you've picked up listeners from all around, all over the world
I've made a good bunch of friends from that.
Yeah.
And they are so, giving and so supportive. But playing this festival, I found like-minded people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they're worldwide. I've got friends in America now, all over the place.
Brilliant.
And that's the beauty of it.
Brilliant.
And that's the beauty of the internet when it's done well.
So tell us a little bit about your involvement with Chukka Productions. Have I got the name right?
Yeah. You've just come from the Clown Fest Army.
Clown Festival to Chukka Productions.
That sounds like this fucking great anarchistic movement, which it is, to Chukka Productions. To me, to you. Not a Chukka Brothers, Chukka Productions.
I mean, if you've got a different segue.
No, fucking hell. How can I get out of this now? We should have come up with the kickboxing lot after this.
I'll move it around.
Some street cred. Fucking hell. The lady who runs it, well, there's two ladies that run it, Sharon and Sarah. Well, Sarah, I went to school with Sarah. She's one of the very intellectual, she'll fucking hate me for saying this, but she was one of them, you know, up there working hard, and I was down there with the punks doing fuck all, glue sniffing down the park. We were polar opposites, you know. I'm not saying that I didn't like her or anything like that. We're just our paths would never have crossed.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
I didn't wear a fucking Pingle jumper.
Yeah.
I'm only joking, sorry.
Couldn't get the glue off it, that's why.
But I was playing a little festival out in the country somewhere, and she was there, and I was there with my son, who was probably about three years old then, and I was playing around with him, messing about like you do. And then she, indirectly through my girlfriend that she knew through dance, she asked me if I'd want to come and have a look at what she does with kids with profound needs and additional needs, and if I'd come and play guitar for her and do some quirky little songs for them and things like that. And I said yes, and I found it, and this is what I'm saying, and it fucking terrified me.
Yeah.
She put me with this young lad who was in a wheelchair, who couldn't communicate, couldn't move, and I had to interact with him, and I had to just do some simple little workshop with him, you know.
Yeah.
And I was adding the music, but I was on the sidelines, I was looking after this young lad.
Yeah.
Now that fucking terrified me, because I'd never done it
before. Of course, yeah.
And so I was like, I was in my 40s at this point.
Yeah.
And that's that other thing I was saying about, you know, when you're insecure and everything like that, it takes lots of different things
to challenge you and push you.
Yeah, once you get somewhere,
yeah,
you know, you really need to fucking shake that soul, don't you, for it to grow again.
Totally.
You know what I mean? And I've been very lucky
yeah.
that I've gone from one place to another, from doing full contact fighting in a ring with fucking hard lads, you know, trying to learn a craft, going back day in and day out, to going to working with kids that can't communicate and all stuff like that. They're polar opposites.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, well, anyway, the company's gone from strength to strength. It's a non-profit organisation. And now they've got a place, a workplace called the Chuckle House, and we have loads of different kids coming in with all sorts of, needs,
yeah.
disabilities.
Absolutely fabulous.
And the team yeah. I work with are the bollocks.
Yeah.
They are, you've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
Honestly, they are beautiful. They are caring. And, you know, and then, you know, when some of the kids, because some of the kids got ADHD, they're bouncing off the walls and
sure,
all this, and I'm
sure.
going, fucking hell, they're annoying me now. Fucking hell, I'm about to lose it. And they're there, you know, being whacked around the head and everything, and they're still mothering them and everything. They,
yeah.
It's the most beautifulest thing to witness.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky that, you know, I get to do all the filming. I get to do...
Yeah, so what you say you do the music with them, you film and music. What sort of things do you
do? They have more of a kids with, you know, kids with just general autism or, you know, ADHD,
Asperger's,
or whatever,
that kind
sort
of thing.
Yeah,
we
run a Chuckle Stars on a Saturday. So we have a bigger array of kids that come in there just to come and do a little bit of drama and stuff like that.
Fabulous.
But we're all doing little workshops, and they always have little projects. So they might
yeah.
want to do a music video. They might want to do this. They might want to do that.
That's great.
Now they're starting to do podcasts and all
yeah.
stuff like that.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, I'm the geezer trying to make it happen
yeah.
for them, you know. Which
so
is,
channeling their energy into something positive.
Yeah, and it'll be, I'll just very quickly talk about... So a few years ago... I said to Sarah, I was getting a bit frustrated because I was going, look, I've got all these goods I can bring to the table and I don't feel that I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I can do more than stand in the fucking corner and play Row, Row, Row Your Boat.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I came up with this concept about, and talking about being switched on to lyrics and what people say.
Yeah.
Some of these kids were coming out with the most profound fucking shit. Do you know what I mean? It was like David Bowie stuff. It was like, it was fucked up. It was beautiful, you know.
Yeah.
And as a songwriter, I was going, that is fucking great. I've got to...
Yeah.
You know, I had a song called... I was wearing it. Somebody had put a little badge on me, and it said, N-O-1, number one. And one of the kids come up to me and just pointed at me and went, no one, and walked off. I wrote a song called No One that day. It just something
yeah.
went in my head, and I just
yeah.
went, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
but anyway, so I pitched this idea. Why don't we get the kids to write the lyrics? So over the next few months, we were asking them to draw pictures, title stuff. Did anybody, you know, come up with poems, anything that they wanted to do? And
yeah.
there's a song called Pocket Full of Stars that's on YouTube. The kid with the pocket full of stars. And, you can see how fucking magnificent they are through that, and you can see the kids at the end of it as well.
Yeah.
So they did loads of drawings that I did a little bit of animation with and stuff like that, and yeah, it's very beautiful. It's very beautiful.
Tell us about Artshed then, Alan.
Artshed, yeah, that Artshed is Chuckle Production style. We work with a bunch of kids who are like, well, they're not kids, are they? 18 to 30. And it's basically just trying to wise them up into a working life. So we're just doing simple little workshops with them. You know, I do music and film and things like that. They're doing media stuff. Majority of it's based around creativity,
yep.
drama, music, things
yep.
like that.
Yep.
It seems to be working. The kids really enjoy it. They're a really great bunch.
Yeah.
I mean, yesterday, we were really lucky. The last couple of days, we got to take them to Victoria Hall. And they did a workshop there. We went all around the place, walking around all that. I mean, Vicky Hall, you know, it was great for me because I used to go there as a kid, see all the rock bands, you know. Saw,
yeah, absolutely.
Saw Iron Maiden there, Saxon, all these, you know, when, you know, back
yeah.
in there.
Yeah.
Back in the late 70s and stuff.
Motorhead?
I didn't, but yeah. I think my brother might have seen them. My brother yeah. saw AC/DC there with Bon Scott.
Oh, wow. Well,
with
wow.
Bon Scott, yeah. On two tours before he died. I mean, that is a claim to fame, especially
yeah.
in that venue. It was just fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's a
and
great
that, and that, then we took them around the Regent for the same sort of thing. Yeah, so it was great.
Climb to fame, climb to fame. It's your chance to drop a name. Trying to outdo each other's kind of lame. One-upmanship is the only aim. Claim to fame, claim to fame, claim to fame, claim to fame. Oh, thank you very much.
Everyone loves the idents. Those boxes might come down on your head if you do that.
That was a solid wardrobe, that was. Right.
It's really everything but a solid wardrobe. It's not a very solid wardrobe.
Tell you what,
at all.
My ears are sweating with these cans on, I tell you.
Oh, are they?
Oh,
that's
Jesus.
Lovely. I'll be sanitising those afterwards. So, claim to fame then. Tell us about your trousers, Alan.
There's so much to talk about. I've just had such a rich and rewarding, adventurous life. So you've picked on me fucking trousers.
I've picked on your trousers, yeah. Clarence Cliff.
It's not a claim to fame, really, is it? It's just a... Well, okay, so... that Clarence Cliff film was filmed round here. It's at one of these Amazon fucking Prime specials or something. And they were filming it. They were asking for extras from round the Potteries. So on a whim, somebody sent me the email saying, oh, they're after extras. So on a whim, it was a really easy application form. Do you know what I mean? It basically needed three things or else I wouldn't have bothered.
Right.
It was like age, height, fucking weight or something like that, or something like inside leg or something shit like that. I lied about all of them.
Yeah.
but anyway, so I get the gig and basically went down to Black Country Museum and they're doing this. So we're shooting all day. There was one particular scene. You can actually see me at the beginning, on the beginning of the film, where she runs and she picks a flower up right at the beginning.
Yeah.
You can see I'm a bargeman tying up a piece of rope. So that's my claim of fame there. Okay.
Okay.
But now I'm going to fucking destroy it. So there was this particular scene where they're shooting across the bridge over the canal. And my job was to shovel coal in the back of this cart.
Yeah.
That was, you know, being driven by this big cart horse, you know. So there was all extras there and all that. And I was doing a manual job, feeling like my granddad going, oh, that's what my fucking granddad would have done. And there was loads of extras all milling around doing the thing that they had to do. And there was two ladies, elderly ladies, walking up behind me as I was doing it. And they had to walk past me and I had to nod my cap to them as they walked past. Anyway, so they do a quick take and then they shoot again. And I bend over to get a good shovel full. And my trousers rip right up my arse. And I'm talking about from the old truffling zone... right up the back to my lower back, totally split. And I never wear underpants. I find them far too restricting.
I'll cross out, I was going to do the pants or boxers section later, but that's gone out the window.
I never wear them. I can't be arsed. My arse is too big as it is to be coated in some man-made fabric. I always try to wear loose trousers as it is. So anyway, so I ripped my trousers and these two ladies are walking up and I go, fuck. And honestly, it doesn't sound like much, but I was humiliated.
Oh.
Even the horse looked away. I was, and then one of the runners walked past me with the walkie-talkie and I went, in that terrible, terrible voice, I went, I've ripped my trousers. She looked around, she went, what's the matter? And I turned around like that, thinking that obviously the camera across the way was going to fucking all of a sudden jump the canal and zoom right up to me backside, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I realised these two ladies were walking behind me, and I had to do another five takes with these poor, and actually it was Jilly Nichols, who's quite a famous singer around here.
Yeah,
she's a lovely lady.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, so you got to ask her, really. Get her on here and tell her if she saw what I had for lunch.
She can come on and, talk about the crack.
She looked straight up me Harold.
Wow. Blimey. So while we're in the process of humiliating you, then, I believe you once didn't get a Staffordshire Police Bravery Award.
This is like... I've told this to my son, right, because it's more like a little fable. This is that 6% Viking coming at me, Nordic tale.
The storytelling, yes.
Yeah. The pub that I worked at, Granville's, that we talked about, that was having a refurb. So I had the weekend off, and it was something like the last week in January. And I was out for a beer, and I was in the bar next door, a CNA, and I was having a drink with my mate. But previous to that, I was walking up the high street and a police car came past and stopped. And I knew the sergeant. And he said to me, "All right, Alan, have fun, all right, on the door tonight?" I goes, "No, Granville's is closed tonight." And he goes, "Oh, all right, okay." He goes, "Keep an eye out for this certain character." And I won't name him. And I knew the lad and I'd done some boxing with him. And he was a good lad, but he was a bit of a... he got misled very easily.
Yeah.
And he obviously... was having too much substance, and he was obviously on a death wish. And I went, yeah, I'll phone it in if I see him. So I went and had a beer. Anyway, I saw him walk past the window, and then I saw a commotion going on, and I went out. And apparently, he was just walking up and down the high street, punching people out. The police were after him because he assaulted an old lady after his handbag. Proper deprivation shit. But he was obviously on a death wish, And I went up to him and he turned and he was looking straight through me. He wasn't on this planet. And I just went, "Mate, just go home. Go home. Police are already after you.
Yeah.
I'll go home and face the consequences tomorrow."
Yeah.
And I walked off, went back in. Anyway, something else happened. I looked and I think it was the young lad who worked in the kitchen was crossing the road and I saw him go up and punch him on, and I thought that's it. But the bar manager was there, and I just went, call it in. She had a walkie talkie light, and I just went down, held him there. Police car came, threw him in the back of the police car, and I just thought, didn't think anything else of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, following week, I met Granville's. Manager comes up, the owner comes up. "Oh, well done, Alan. You did some terrific work." He goes, "Well, the sergeant's coming down. He wants to have a word with you in a minute." So he comes down, he goes, "Great work, Alan. I want to give you, I'm putting you in for the Citizen's Bravery Award." And he goes, "Citizen's Bravery Award? But people need to know about people like you." I says, "Oh, do they?" I went, "No, you're all right." He goes, no, it's got to happen, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, following week, I met good old Granville's again, and I get a lock-in. And my mate's down from Scotland. I haven't seen him for ages.
Yeah.
Anyway, we get leathered. And it's about 6:30 in the morning. And of course, like an idiot, I walk out and I climb into my car. And I don't, I do not encourage this to anybody. It was a total dick thing to do. But I get in my car and I walk around and I get stopped at the bypass. The rest is history to a certain degree. So anyway, I've spent the night in the cells and I knew most of the bobbies because I'd done boxing with him in some form and all that. And I never got a call off Mr. Sergeant Gleave because, exactly. But I love that story because it sums up life and it sums up pretentious awards for just being a decent human being. You don't need pats on the back or anything like that. You either try to be a good human being or you don't. So that's a little message for you, Boris Johnson.
It says that there's some good and bad in everyone.
Exactly. Oh, and I'm a total fucking dick as well.
Yeah.
And life beautiful. But that's what I say to me, boy. It's all right to be a dick.
Yeah.
But just try to be a fucking good person while you're being a dick.
Absolutely. That's a great message. And I think that might be a good message to end on, actually.
Yeah. Okay, now words of wisdom.
Words of wisdom. Alan, it's been an absolute pleasure and quite a hoot.
Thank you
very
sir.
Much.
Thank
Hope you. To have you on again soon. And do check out Alan's album. All the links to it will be in the episode description.
It'll be released on Bandcamp.
Bandcamp. Brilliant. Fabulous. Thanks a lot, Alan.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, guys. Listening to A Couple of Drips. The show was conceived and presented by Chris Granger and is a Cup the Mic production.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, Chris here. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to support the production of future episodes, then subscriptions are available. Simply click on the support button in the episode description. See you next time.